Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Ada's board meeting for March 3rd, 2016. I'll call the meeting to order. Rin, if you would do the roll call for the board members, please.
Mr. Wilkins.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Paraday.
Here.
Mr. Kennedy.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Here.
Ms. Brown.
Here.
Mr. Dick.
Here.
Mr. Poos.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Would you continue with staff and public?
There's a lot of people in the room, so as I point to you, please state your name and your organization.
John Springsteen, Ada.
Back in corner.
Paul Chester, Ada.
Mark Davis, Ada.
Laura Stender, Ada.
Alan Bailey, Stormy Two.
Marcia Davis, Governor's Office.
Sunny Morrison, Accutite.
Nick Shmoniak, Ada.
Dan Britton, Pentex.
Mark Gardner, Western Financial Group.
Jim Hemsath, Ada.
Lisa Ross, Bridgewater, Bittner, and Jerome.
Gene Terrio, Ada.
Karsten Rodvik, Ada.
Back corner here.
Sherry Severson, Ada.
Kirk Warren, West Indies Authority.
Jennifer Haldane, Ada.
Mike Hensley, Ada.
Viola Hakama, Ada. Granite Strick, Namas.
Larry Howell, HGR Chair.
Elwood Bramer, Alaska Journal of Commerce.
Michael Lamb, Ada.
Tom Erickson, Ada.
Jerry Judea, Law.
Nancy Wainwright.
Beth Anderson, Ada.
Ray Dinger, Wilfred Bank.
Carl McKeon, Jack White Commercials.
Quinn Kempinen, Ada. Do we have any public on the phone?
Yeah, Dan Bross, KUAC Public Radio, Fairbanks.
Any other public on the phone?
Louie McLean, Northern Alaska Environmental Center.
What was that name again, please?
Julia McLean.
Any other public?
Thank you, Bryn. Before us is the agenda, and I'll let Jeff take a look at it. I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
To the chair?
Yes.
I would request a change to the agenda. In addition, under new business, to add Skagway ore terminal and confidential deliberative process matters regarding potential legislation and financial planning to the executive session.
Second. Okay. Any objection to that? Any objection to the modified agenda? Hearing none, this is approved before us. Item number five is a prior meeting for December 17th and January 13th.
Chairman, I'll move those as minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Dick.
Second.
Thank you, Elaine. Comments, deletions, additions, corrections for the minutes. Objection to adopting the minutes. Then the minutes are for December 17th and January 13th are adopted. Next up is item number six, public comments. For those wishing to comment before the board, I would ask you to limit your comments to 3 minutes. And for the record, please state your name and affiliation if you have any. I will start with first, anybody online wishing to make a public comment? Anybody online? Anybody online? Anybody in the boardroom? Yes?
Second floor?
Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman Bruce and members of the board. My name is Nancy Wainwright, and first and foremost, I want to express my gratitude to the board for hearing the public's concern on the issue of Dell's conflict of interest. As you may recall, nearly 2 years ago in June of 2014, in response to the request from the public, the board asked Ada staff to provide a formal response to the issue of Dell's conflict of interest. And finally, at the last meeting, the board reiterated that request, and now we do have a memo concerning that. In 3 minutes, I don't have adequate time to provide an analysis of that document, so I'm here today to ask that the board not vote on Resolution 1602 that the staff has prepared for board adoption without affording the board or the public time to give a written cogent comments about this important issue. But just to give you a few highlights and to encourage you to allow the public to submit more formal comments, I'll give a list of the most troubling issues in the ADA staff memo. First and foremost, the memo was apparently drafted on the advice of Mr. Jerry Judé. There is no indication that Mr. Judé disclosed that he too, or someone with his name, has represented interests affiliated with Dowell. I will pass out a document showing that Mr. Judé, in private practice, was the organizer of a business that is directly linked to Dowell. You won't see the name Dowell on this document, but the name of the company, 4040B, caught my eye. 4040B is Dowell's address. And when I looked into the Division of Corporations records, the very same people who are principals in Dowell, Mr. Noble, who is a project manager for ADA, Mr. Osgood, principal in Dowell, are listed as managers of that company. So it would be beneficial if this board can determine whether Mr. Judé is the most appropriate person to undertake the conflict of interest analysis for ADA. What caught my eye was the attachment 3 to the staff memo that Mr. Judé wrote to Department of Transportation almost 2 years ago that was not disclosed by staff or to the public. And the tone of it is not one of an attorney trying to discover whether there is a conflict of interest, but rather to gather evidence in support of finding of no conflict of interest. Now, that may be an appropriate thing for a private attorney to do on behalf of his client, but in a public situation where the conflict of interest or apparent conflict of interest is critical, that inquiry should have been very judicious and non-prejudiced toward finding no conflict of interest. There's a few other anomalies in the document. It says there is no conflict of interest because ADA's interests and Nova Copper's interests are aligned. That may be true, but alignment of interests is not the definition of a conflict of interest. The Supreme Court in Griswold and Carney and other cases has found that a conflict is where a person's income or assets will be promoted when the person is supposed to be an independent actor. Dow has reaped financial benefits from Nova Copper when it was a principal of NANA and primary owner. NANA was the primary owner from DOT and now ADA. Its financial interests are being promoted, and it is not an independent actor. As this board is well aware, that normally disclosure of a conflict comes before the conflict vote or before the conflict occurs, and the entity or contracting party normally then decides whether to proceed. There is no disclosure. There's no record of disclosure to DOT or NANA that NANA owned 51% of Dell. And I could find no examples of ratification of a conflict of interest after an entity has worked on a project for years. And the Supreme Court, at least, has said that any actions taken in such a situation where they may violate the conflict of interest, even when disclosed, must be rescinded or sent back to the governing body. I respectfully request that this board not take hurried action after waiting 2 years for this analysis so the public can thoroughly review the document and background information and provide written comments to the board.
Thank you, Nancy. Any questions from the board?
Oh, I'd like to pass out this.
All right, anybody else wishing to testify? Seeing none, I will close public comments. All right. Up is item number 7 under new business, resolution 016-012 to investments, LLC. I'll look at motion to put on the table.
Mr. Chairman, I would move L16-01 for approval.
I'll second that motion.
Discussion, John.
Item 7, a loan resolution number L16-01 regards the purchase by the authority of a participation in a loan to Two Door Investors LLC. It's the policy of the authority that the purchase of a loan participation to be approved by the board if the authority's participation in a loan will equal or exceed $3 million, or if the aggregate amount of the authority's participation in loans to any borrower or guarantor will exceed $5 million. The dollar amount of this participation is $2,062,000, which is below the $3 million individual loan limit. However, there is a related debt in the amount of $8,031,417. So in excess of $5 million aggregate. At this time, I ask Chris Anderson to present.
All right. Welcome, Chris.
Morning. As John indicated, Northern Bank has a request in front of us to participate up to 90% in the amount of $2,062,000. Our term on this will be a 25-year fixed rate. North Rim will be at a variable on 10 years. The guarantors involved are Mark Dunn and Carl Kuhn. Ray Dinger with North Rim and Carl are with us this morning. The purpose is to refinance a multi-tenanted retail building on West Tudor. Actually, for those who have been around a while, this building is right next door to the building that Ava used to be in before they moved in. That is the location of the property. The economic benefit of this refinance is to lower the interest rate, lower the monthly payment, the maturity, elongate the maturity, and eliminate the balloon payment. This benefits the cash flow, which ultimately benefits the small businesses. It is a multi-tenanted property, and it does retain 3 jobs on this project. The borrowing entity is managed by Mark Dunn. He is an experienced real estate agent and property manager, as well as the fact that Mr. Kuhn has commercial real estate and brokerage experience. He's been in the market for some time. In regards to the market, retail rates and rents are expected to be stable. Vacancies are still continuing at about 5%. The general retail market is cautious given the national market. However, the local market is considered stable. It's considered that it will be represented by slow growth, and occupancies are expected to remain at current levels. And there may be slight increases. The recent decreases in oil prices is always a concern. It's a concern on multiple levels. However, borrowing continued or precipitous decline, the overall outlook and all of the presentations that we've seen in the forecast is in regards to the retail market that they anticipate a slow growth. We would take a first lien position on this property. It has been valued at $4,550,000. It would be only a 50% loan to value, which gives you a debt service coverage at 2.29:1, which is only above our de minimis 1.25:1. We would also take an assignment of rent. As John mentioned, there are related loans. On this request, Mr. Kuhn is a guarantor on multiple properties that we have, retail-based. All of them have been paying as agreed. Financial information was sent to you under separate cover. There are no known environmental issues with this property. And the strength that we see in the request, the fact that it is a low loan value, we do have a good loan history with the related debt that has been on the books, and we have strong guarantor financial strength as well. We didn't see an extraordinary risk above general market risk. In regards to the portfolio diversification, these are calendar year-end numbers. Ada had 22.56% of the total statewide portfolio in the retail industry, and with this request, it was increased to 23.04. And in regards to the Anchorage region, we were at 23.73, and that would increase to 24.65%. We feel that this particular loan fits within the parameters of this program, so we are recommending it for approval. So I would open it for questions.
Thank you, Chris.
Mr. Chairman.
Fred.
Chris, could you just talk for a minute about the participation rate? North Rim at 10% variable and Ada at 9% fixed for 25 years.
Excuse me, that's a term. 10 years is a term, not a rate. Excuse me for interrupting.
Yes, it's a term and it's the share.
Right.
I was referring to the share.
Okay, sorry.
What interests me was just, and as always, I take the opportunity to get schooled when I interact with you. It would seem to me that the ADIS position
at 90% fixed over 25 years has inherently more risk in it than Northrim's position at 10% variable, because their interest rate is going to reflect the trends in the market over the time, because it's variable and ours is going to be fixed for a substantial period of time, thus moving risk from them to us, or us taking more risk than they are.
There's a couple of things. First of all, I think, quite frankly, the long-term fixed aspect of the rate is our niche in the market. That is why...
You have told me that before.
Yeah, that is
but
why...
Please continue.
That is why people come to ADA. But having said that, I understand the interest rate risk over time. When we have done an analysis on the portfolio, we haven't done one very recently, but I don't think it's changed much. Even though we are offering a 25-year fixed rate, the average term that the loan actually stays on our books is about 7 years. Either from refinance or sale, you know, for whatever purposes, you know, it is a revolving line, and they do add and pay off on a regular basis. So even though we are offering that 25-year fixed money, it doesn't usually stay on the books.
Mr. Chairman, follow up.
Fred.
So where that question leads, and thank you for that explanation, is just, are we in danger of missing the downturn that feels imminent? The as you watch the session unfold in Juneau and you watch the House and Senate Finance Committees begin the necessary cuts that are ongoing, etc., the job loss that's going to be associated with that. I don't want to anticipate tipping over into a recession, but neither do I want to miss the obvious signals that are there. So I just would like some discussion of that risk. And really, this loan is but the tip of the general topic.
Yes, I understand that. I've been through some downturns up here, and no one can completely anticipate the market, but you at least have to have some clue to it, I think. Personally, that's the way I feel, before you start to pull in. And we haven't seen that, particularly in retail and in tourism and even in the office market. If you start to see, you know, a variation in vacancies, if you start to see an increase in delinquencies, in other words, there hasn't been anything material. I mean, our... You know, we have one delinquency in a portfolio of, you know, almost 250 loans. So I don't think that it's wise to pull back too soon, because as you indicated, you
it's can't less wise to pull back too late, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. You can create your own market by doing that. When we went through the 80s, if ADA hadn't been here, I think the cliff would have been much steeper in this market.
There
that way, but we do keep our ears open. Believe me, we do. We talk to bankers, we talk to boosters, we try to stay abreast of the market, and we haven't seen the indication, at least in this market segment, that there are issues.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Certainly.
Follow up. Thank you. Could you speak to the balloon payment? Normally, a balloon payment is triggered. It adds equity into the loan, and avoiding the balloon payment. Can you just discuss that issue?
Well, I actually have not talked about the amount of the balloon or when the balloon is, but in concept, you know, when you have a balloon payment that is integral to a loan, you either have to pay off that balloon or refinance it in some way. It comes due. So oftentimes balloon payments are put in when you want to stretch out the amortization and lower your rates, but you don't want to be in there long term. So you do a balloon payment. You know, it lessens your payment, it increases your cash flow, and it gives you time to have another avenue for financing.
Mr. Chairman, one more question. This is for Director Springsteen. At one point, we were receiving forward-looking information, I think, from DED, trying to keep our eye on this pin. Has that gone by the wayside, or is that available, or what's our current status?
Yeah, certainly. Commissioner, I received what was purported to be the final draft, and I'll distribute that to the board after this meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have a couple of questions. Anybody else have any questions? So what is the policy of a 20-year versus a 25-year amortization rate, length? What is there something, Chris, that 15, 20, is there, there's thresholds, or is it what the applicant asked for? Or?
It's primarily what the applicant asked for.
Okay.
And what the bank asked of us. Lately, because, you know, we've had our floor and our interest rates, there really hasn't been a difference in those, as far as rates.
Okay. And then what review or program or policy are you guys contemplating putting in place with the current regulations dealing with marijuana and folks that want to sublet to that industry?
I don't know if John wants to take that up.
Okay,
I only have one request.
Yeah, to the chair and to the board. I have actually had conversations both with folks that are active in the Washington marijuana industry, and also with folks that are involved in the banking industry in Washington. And generally, because of the federal complications.
Are we allowed to? Can an owner with a loan lease to someone in that industry?
And I believe under current state law that is allowable. But I think given the federal complications that most banks in Washington don't accept that stream of cash flow or the assets, the marijuana assets, as collateral, because of their ability to be taken at any point in time under federal law at this point. So because it's a Class 1 restricted substance.
Any lender who's FDIC insured, which is most of your lenders, cannot open an account.
So the Northrim, let's take this loan for example. The Northrim component, which is a local Alaska bank.
Right.
I assume it's FDIC insured.
They are.
So, and not to pick on this particular loan, and this particular piece of property, but if it's a mall and someone wants to open up something to do with the marijuana industry, they can or cannot do it.
You mean can they move in as a business?
Yes.
I think that they can, but how do you the interaction? I don't know if you have a additional input. I don't know how they pay for it because it'd have to be a cash issue.
So you would get cash coming in the front door here to make your rent, make the loan payment?
For me being...
This is Carl Kuhn.
Well, I really don't need to hear. I guess the answer is we don't have something, and I think we need to do something, and we need to work on something sooner than later. How's that? Does that sound maybe?
To the chair, we are working to better understand what's been happening in other states that have implemented early, and what they are going through in their industry, and we will prepare a policy, have a draft policy.
Or clarify our existing policy, something. I asked that question just because it's a new business. Fred?
Mr. Chairman, it's just several threads associated with that are ongoing discussions. Of course, we have the opening of the licensing process this past week. There's been 113 applicants to date. There are issues surrounding marijuana banking, as you alluded to. Oregon is considering chartering a state bank to be able to bank that money. There may be some unfolding templates or precedents that prove useful. We have concerns elsewhere in the state system I keep waiting for the first marijuana business to show up wanting to use the Alaska Grown logo. We have our portfolio of small business loans that, although these businesses are legal in Alaska, you still have the banking and the federal classification issues, and there's also issues in DNR and some of their agricultural spots. So the state's going to continue to work its way through, and we're going to want to stay engaged with those conversations with ADA and with other entities similarly affected.
Yes, sir.
About as clear as mud.
Well, for those that interest, I think we do have the asset allocation in this report and delinquency rates and whatnot, and it shows ADA below with local banks on that. And I assume, Chris, we are keeping pretty good close tabs on what's going on as we find it.
Yeah, we do.
All right, any further questions for board members? All right, with that, I'll call for the question. Corinne, would you please pull the board?
Mr. Wilkin.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Parody.
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Pruth.
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Next up is item B, Pentex update. We have Mr. Britton with the FNG here to give us the update. I will say, Jerry, don't forget to talk up if you need something. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you. Let's get started.
Jump right in.
Great. Well, good morning. Thanks for having me here today. I think everybody has a brief report that I put together on the operations for Pentex pretty much for a year to date. It's only been a couple of months, but we've continued to provide uninterrupted and good service to our customers. We've had no issues related to the operations of our assets. We've had no major failures, no major equipment issues. We've had zero lost time injuries and zero asphalt vehicle accidents. So we're providing good service and safe service to our customers. Just a change as far as human resources. On January 20th, we received notice that one of our operating groups is elected to be represented by the IBEW. Vote took place on February 25th, in which that group decided to be represented. So they did vote in the IBEW. We'll begin negotiations at some point in the next month or two. It's a small group right now, 3 to 4 members that are our natural gas distribution operators. The Heil trailer that you all had seen in the past, we continued to test the compatibility of that trailer and the enhanced LNG capacity. We've done about 21 round trips from our Titan facility to Fairbanks, averaging around 41,000 pounds and a little over 12,000 gallons, 12,100 gallons of capacity with the tractor we've got it paired to right now. Seems to be working well. We did do 2 round trips from Fairbanks to Prudhoe Bay, 1 full and 1 empty, so that we could make sure we understood the handling characteristics of the trailer as it would be used if we were to use it on the North Slope. Reports from the driver were that the trailer handled well, it was stable, and that he didn't see any problems other than what they normally deal with in driving that road, additionally caused by the trailer. So it hauled similarly to what the fuel trailers that they were using to move ultra low and other fuels up to the slope.
Mr.
Chairman, I want to back up to the previous paragraph. Mr. Britton, the report you've given us says that you received notice that IBEW had filed a petition to represent all natural gas operators and natural gas operator leads. Is that limited to FNG?
Yes.
And is that petition, has the cards have already been turned in and counted, the ballots counted? It's done.
Yes, they were counted on the 25th of February. And it happened very quickly now.
Did you I was unaware of that effort, and it's a material change in our labor relations. I'm just curious as to how that came about so quickly.
So I think it's a number of things that happened. One is, over the years, we have seen union pressure when we have years of high construction activity. So when we're doing significant amount of distribution pipe installations, our workforce balloons substantially. We go from 3 or 4 full-time employees to 40 or 50 employees working out in the field, and the unions see that and they think of it as a strong opportunity to get a large bargaining unit. In addition, at that time, we're also bringing outside influences into our workforce, people that have been working in different jobs and different unions, and they start to talk to our employees. One other challenge was this year, the contractors that were doing the work on the interior gas utility were paid Bacon wages, or Davis Bacon, new Davis Bacon, and our employees are not, and it's a substantial difference. And those pressures seem to have caused kind of this change in mindset amongst our operators.
Go ahead.
Those are the main influence, I think, that led to this, led to the vote. Thank you.
So did you have meetings with the employees?
I did. I actually provided them a couple of letters. The union filed a human rights complaint against me, suggesting that we ran afoul of the rules. We feel quite strongly that we didn't, and we'll work through that in the next couple of weeks is when they'll do their investigation. We met with the employees. We're limited to what we can say and what we can ask and what we can talk about once they have the union is filed. But we did speak with them discuss our position was that we felt that a continued one-on-one relationship was much more beneficial to our employees than being represented by the union, but we were unsuccessful.
How many employees are we talking about?
3 or potentially 4. Right now it's 3. We've got one at a vacant position. We do have a disagreement in the supervisor that's in that role. The union feels that individual should be part of the bargaining unit. We do not. The NLRB has not taken a position on it yet. They're going to let us start negotiations.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Continue.
Moving on into the financial aspects. It's been a challenging first part of the year. As you all, I think all are very aware, the weather in Alaska has been extremely warm, particularly in Fairbanks. We have seen 17% lower than budgeted heating degree days. I think I was reading on the paper this morning coming in that Fairbanks did not even hit minus 30 for one day yet for this during this winter session.
Wow.
When on average we have 20 to 25 days of minus 30 in an average winter. And so with that, and that affects our revenue and our sales to our customers. We've seen a significant drop in revenues in the first couple of months, our sales volumes, about 17%. That's being contributed both by the warmer weather and also with the current pricing, oil pricing. We've seen the switching of customers from gas to oil, and there's continued pressure as the oil prices have stayed down, as people continue to see those low oil prices, they start to think about switching. We will look and watch expenses very closely as we move forward into the year. We will make sure that any capital projects are necessary and that deferrals, if prudent, will be done in order to ensure we maintain financial security.
Okay.
That's fair. I update it.
Okay. Questions from the board? I have a question about the commercial customers switching to alternative fuels. Is there a policy or is there a contract that they sign up and they're how much notice they have to give and can they do it? Is it industry standard? What?
Yeah, generally within a utility standard there's really no long-term contractual commitment when you are using utility systems. Most of these customers are interruptible customers that we have in our system, so we can interrupt them at our convenience. They can switch to an alternative fuel at their convenience. But sometimes when you install a new service where you're making a capital investment, you will have in that 1 year contract requirement or some form like that, but generally with utility service, it's come and go. Now, our firm customers that left the system, if they want to come back, then it's subject to whether we have that availability or not. So if we have a firm customer that's on our system that switches and leaves, we can go try and find another firm customer to replace them. But most of these customers are interruptible already.
And will the rate change, has the rate change been implemented?
The rate change was implemented, rate change was implemented January 1st.
And so what is the rough delta between now fossil fuels, oil versus natural gas?
It's about 25%. Oil is about 25% cheaper right now. Our natural gas on average to consumers is $20 per 1,000 cubic feet. The oil equivalent today is somewhere around $14.50 in that range.
Does that mean we should Anchorage here? We should get fuel tanks and change our boilers over?
In Anchorage?
Yeah.
No. In Anchorage, you're still paying less than $10 per 1,000 cubic feet, so you're still seeing a savings compared to your alternative.
We'll get these started. We'll wing it. Fellow board member Gary,
I can't believe you asked it. I'm just sitting here thinking
you've been too quiet, Gary. I've got to get you going.
I'm just sitting here thinking about, if you ever think you can guess the future, just look back. 3 years ago, we sat in this very room, most of us, and we were wringing our hands and gnashing our teeth. People were throwing their keys on the table, and it was a calamity, and God, here we are, and you get this report. It turned on a dime.
It did turn on a dime.
It's just remarkable.
Happened very quickly.
It's a great case story for some master's degree, postgraduate degree study. It's really remarkable. And it's happening all over the nation, all over the world for that matter, but here we are in our little vortex here, and you get this, which you would have never, ever predicted 3 years ago. So, yeah.
I did get him going. That's good. All right. Any questions from for Dan? Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Under item business, item C, resolution G16-01, approving Fairbanks natural gas rate decrease.
Move to approve.
Second. Thank you. Before us, John.
Item 7C, resolution number resolution number G16-01 establishes that the interim rates approved by the board on December 17, 2015 be adopted as permanent rates effective March 31, 2016. The proposed permanent rates achieve ADA's policy and financial objectives for the Pentex acquisition and IEP and result in significant rate reductions from 2015 rates for F&G's customers while maintaining cash position in the companies despite challenging projected market and environmental conditions. Public input was invited from January 4th through February 4th, and a public hearing was held in Fairbanks on January 21st. One person testified at the public hearing, and a single written comment was received. Mark Gardner, Dan Britton, and Carson Rodnick are available to answer questions.
Does anybody from the board have any questions for those gentlemen? Any further discussion on the resolution before us? Brandon, would you poll the board, please?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Yes.
Ms. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Pruitt?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Next up is item D, G16-02, Ambler Mining Industrial Access Road Project, waiver of conflict of interest for prior activity. Motion.
I'll move the resolution.
Second.
Discussion, John.
Item 70, resolution number 16-02, is a waiver of conflict of interest for Dow for prior activity related to the Ambler Mining District Industrial Access Project. Staff and our attorney looked into the conflict of interest allegation made against Dell HKM Engineers regarding their work on the Ambler Road project. The memo in your packet reports on the inquiry. In essence, the conflict of interest rules applicable to engineers are that conflicts are to be avoided, but if one exists, the engineer's obligation is to disclose the situation to the client and allow the client to determine whether to use the engineer's services or not. When DOT engaged Dell to work on the access study for the Ambler project, Dow disclosed that it had already performed work for Nova Copper's predecessors. DOT also knew that Dow was at that time owned by Nana Development Corporation. DOT nevertheless engaged Dow to work on the project, which eliminated any conflict of interest question. When ADA took over the Ambler project, Dow was not doing work for Nova Copper, and Dow was no longer owned by Nana, so no possible conflict existed at that time. In the summer of 2015, Dow did additional work for Nova Copper to delineate wetlands around its mining claims. At that time, ADA's discretionary work on the Ambler project was suspended under the governor's administrative order. Staff and our attorney have concluded Dow's 2015 work for Nova Copper does not constitute a conflict of interest for three main reasons. One, the wetlands delineation work did not involve the mining district access road. Dow was therefore not doing work on the, quote, same project, unquote, for two different parties. Two, ADA and Nova Copper have aligned interests in pursuing the development of the Ambler Mining District, as evidenced by the MOU we signed. Dow's work for Nova Copper complements rather than conflicts with the work for ADA. Three, the 2015 work occurred when ADA's discretionary work on the project was suspended. As such, Dow's professional judgment in the work for ADA could not realistically have been affected by the work also being done for Nova Copper. To eliminate all possible doubt about the conflict of interest question, staff and our attorney recommend the board adopt resolution number G16-02 to waive any possible conflict with respect to Dow's work for Nova Copper up through January 21st, 2016, and Jerry Judea is available to answer questions.
Thank you, John. Questions from the board? Jerry?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to thank Ms. Wainwright for being with us for the last couple of years, and I have shared her frustration of getting us to where we are today, but you have been patient, professional, and I appreciate that, and I wanted to say thank you. We haven't wasted the last 2 years. This decision could have come sooner, but I know just talking with folks, since there's been a lot of work put into this and time. So today, I just want to say that I have complete confidence in our staff and our legal advice, and I'm prepared to vote yes on the resolution. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a comment. Thank you. It just appeared to me from somebody that sits on ethical boards that it was a comprehensive investigation. Other ethical boards I sit on the Matsu Borough, we don't allow public input into our decision. We look at the facts. That's what I think was presented in the report. Thank you very much, John. I'm satisfied. I'm going to vote yes on the resolution.
Thank you. Fred?
Mr. Chairman, I wondered if we might ask Mr. Judea if he had any additional observations in light of the public testimony we received.
You're in.
Yeah, I can answer questions. You got a question?
Right. My question was, do you have any additional testimony in light of the public testimony we received? There were specific concerns expressed that are deeper legally than I can perceive that concerning the corporation
of 4040B and concerning whether the conflict of interest standard is interest aligns or where income is generated. And I'd like a legal perspective on that question.
4040B is not Dow Engineers. It's a real estate transaction involving the partnership to Burlington LLC. I represent the LLC.
Thank you. The second question was interest aligned versus income generation.
The conflict of interest standards in the legal field are generally understood as being between the interest of one client versus another, or a personal interest, including a personal financial interest of the lawyer in the conflict. So if you apply those standards apply to lawyers, not clients. In the engineering standard, it would be whether the engineer's professional judgment is somehow being impaired by work being done to another client.
Thank you.
The fact that they might be receiving income from two different sources may be part of the potential conflict, but it isn't really the definition of the conflict.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you. That's exactly what I needed, Mr. Judea. If you go to page 5 of the board memorandum on January 21st, it says the guidance of professional engineering societies provide on conflicts of interest confirms that these rules mean what they say. An engineer can ethically act for more than one party that has an interest in a particular project. I, too, am prepared to vote yes on the resolution and move the question.
Question has been moved. Crane, would you pull the board?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Yes.
Ms. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Cruz?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Our next item up is Resolution G16-03, aided board supporting governor travel and hiring restrictions.
So moved.
Thank you. John?
Resolution G16-03 regards aid in support of Governor Walker's hiring travel restrictions, which there was a letter issued to all commissioners from the Chief of Staff on January 5th, 2016, that we eliminate non-essential travel and we restrict hire. However, it was a request from the governor that the state's quasi-independent organizations, including ADA, adopt similar travel restriction and hiring restriction policies.
Questions from the board? Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Please look at page 2, section 3, line 3. My question is, does the resolution need to be clarified as to whether this is a calendar year or a fiscal year? And if so, I would support a friendly amendment to clarify that.
I don't think the friendly amendment would hurt.
It's up to whoever wants. I would, for us simple people like me, it would be a calendar year. For the financial people like Michael, who gets into all of this stuff, he'd want the fiscal year. So it's up to you folks, but I think rather it ought to be clear.
Well, if we did vote for 6 months, we could have double that.
All right. On behalf of a retired potato chip salesman who wants to keep things simple, I would move that line 3 be amended in one meeting per calendar.
Okay. Any second for that amendment?
Second.
Objection? The amendment is included. And would you pull the board?
I just want to say thank you for including the board and us putting this together. I think that we all came up with a very rational and reasonable policy that would probably be a model for others. So thank you.
I commend first the administration for trying to be frugal on travel. And secondly, Mr. Chairman, as a personal note, I'm flying to Prudhoe Bay on my own nickel and dime on March 22nd, even March 21st, even though I know there'll be other related expenses involved, so I can touch, feel, and see significant investments in assets by AGL on the North Slope. I think it's prudent for my future understanding of some of the projects up there, and encourage other board members where they feel fit to look for opportunities to be frugal in these times of financial hardship to the state of Alaska.
Thank you, Dan. Any further comments? Bryn?
Mr. Wilkin?
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Faraday?
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Yes.
Ms. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Cruz?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Next up is item F, Interior Project, Energy Project Update. John?
Item 7F, update of the Interior Energy Project. I'd ask June Terrio to present and call on others as needed.
Mr. Chairman, as indicated on the cover memo, if I could have Bob Shevchek, Nick Simoniak, and Tom Erickson at the table with me, I think that is the team that we have information to respond to members' questions. Mr. Chairman, just to let you know that when I view the Interior Energy Project, I think of the components of gas supply, LNG plant, transportation, storage and receipt of the LNG, and then distribution. I certainly want to assure you that work on all of those components is ongoing. However, the making a determination moving forward with the supply out of an LNG plant is a critical component that impacts a number of those other components. And so you have received a copy of a cover memo with the Interior Energy RFP Review Committee results. That committee was charged with evaluating the submittals to the RFP. They had previously been narrowed down to two finalists. One was Spectrum on the North Slope and Salix with a proposal for supply out of Cook Inlet. And I was not a member of that evaluation team, but towards the end of their deliberations, I started to participate just to get up to speed or make sure I was up to speed on all of the information that they were considering as they moved towards making a recommendation to the board. Today, we are prepared, or the team is prepared, to make a recommendation to the board, and I've got Bob Shevchek with me to go over the work of the evaluation committee leading up to their recommendation.
Thank you. The very first report you have that's highlighted RFP review committee notes and results really outlines both the proceedings and the results from that meeting on the 4th of February. It was a full-day meeting. There was a complete review of the submittals and of third-party reviews of both the proposers and their documents. Full roundtable discussion of members' thoughts, issues, analysis, and ratings. And at the end of the day, it was a unanimous selection of Salix as the top-ranked respondent. If you remember back to June, as we were talking about the RFP process, we had, you know, the infinity of ideas into a funnel that turned into 17 proposals that was then narrowed down to five finalists, that was narrowed to two semifinalists, and we have now what you have before you as a top-ranked proposal, and that was Salix's proposal. If you want to put this in context, and Senator Wilkin was speaking about that earlier, if you think about, you know, December of 2014, we were looking at a project that was pushing $300 million of capital expenses and annual revenue requirement of about $25 million a year. And the process, both by which we followed and the proposers that turned in, our two finalists were both under $75 million in capital expenses and were in a $10 to $15 million annual revenue requirement range. So the process and the recognition of what it would take to be successful really has worked. We're pleased with both proposals that came forward. There were strengths and weaknesses, and we weighed them. If you look to The reasons that were offered, and that would get you to page 4, down at the bottom, your packet has, it's the lower right-hand corner, page 4, that gets you the reasons that the committee felt one was stronger than the other. They were really impressed with both, and as you look at the third-party reviews, both had strengths. When it came down to lower annual revenue requirements, when you think about the annual revenue requirement and how it was put together for this project, that's primarily your fixed costs. And the lower your demand, the higher your unit costs, and that weighed in heavily as we looked at the price of oil and the differential between oil and gas, and Salix had the lower annual revenue requirement, and as the out years went, it was significantly lower. Overall, the amounts of payments to the two were different. The higher risk of excessive LNG prices or cash deficiencies weighed into the North Slope. It costs more to build, it costs more to operate, and in low demand scenarios, there was a challenge to could the project succeed in the first 5 years. That was stronger in the North Slope. Those challenges were stronger on the North Slope option than the Cook Inlet option. The transportation differences were there. There was some preference to the term sheets and the terms that the parties were willing to go to and how far they were willing to change to match the needs of the IEP. There was a third-party financial review that really showed the parent company of Salix as being strong and able to pull off the project that the committee saw. Golden Valley's decision to choose summer only versus year-round base demand, when you're looking at how much demand you have and where are your annual revenue requirements, that summer only fit better into the economics of a smaller Cook Inlet project than it did to a North Slope project, and it influenced that risk in the early years. The changing economic conditions with oil prices is one that really has changed the entire project. As you heard your report earlier from FNG, and if you remember, as many as possible, as quickly as possible, as soon as possible, and it was an energy relief and air quality approach. Really has changed to energy stability and air quality and the husbanding of capital expenditures in order to ensure you have a project that will cash flow across time has led to a shrinking of expectations both in the community and the urgency of need. And so the Salix project allowed more opportunity to have an infrastructure in place that the community could then build off when the oil differential changed. It was close, you know, that's how they ended up to be two finalists, but really the nature of the projects led toward it was a unanimous call on which one had the best opportunity to succeed. As you see at the end of the report on page 5, there were some issues with the Salix proposal that the committee had some issues with, and so it wasn't a recommendation to go straight to the board. It was a top-ranked proposal with a recommendation to negotiate onto the term sheet, and that is what the IEP team has been doing, led more by the utilities, as they're the ones that ultimately have to sign both the term sheets and the contracts that pay for the tolling, and that work has been ongoing. In the rest of your packet, you have two reports from Arcadis. These are not the exact reports that were reviewed by the evaluation committee because Arcadis used confidential information in preparing the reports, and so we offered both Salix and Spectrum the opportunity to look at the third-party review reports and identify any information they did not want released publicly. And so you have 95% of what was to the evaluation committee in this report released publicly with the agreement of the parties. And I won't read it to you, and we won't, you know, take you through it line by line, but I'll take you to the last paragraph on page 12 of your packet. And there's a section that says overall reasonableness and completeness of development plan, and there's a section like that for both. And what you read in both of them, that both of them are reasonable, complete, and thorough proposals. There's an expectation that they could be pulled off. There's a plus or minus 30% range in costs, and that also weighed in the committee's thinking as you looked at a $75 million plant on the North Slope. Could you afford a 30% plus within the money we have and the expected demands? And then finally, at the very bottom, it gives you the capital costs per ton, which is the ratio they used, and Salix has came in at 105% of their worldwide metric, and Spectrum's came in at 48%. And so there was some judgment there as to which one was closest to the plus 30 and which one might be minus 30 in overall risk analysis. But really, at the end of the day, Arcadis felt both were solid, strong proposals, and that's the information that you have before you. Before I take you to the timeline, I'll stop talking and breathe and let you ask any questions you might have.
Thank you, Bob. Questions from the board?
Mr. Chairman.
Right.
Bob, in the paragraph above the overall reasonableness and completeness of the development plan, Mr. Chairman, I was a member of this committee and support its conclusions. I just wanted to hear some discussion for the board of the 1574 delivered price, which is in the ballpark of the $15 target, but the plus or minus 30% that's in the overall reasonableness and completeness development plan. Can you basically offer some additional discussion of the risk of our, the ups and downs of the risk that we face as we continue to work to meet the target that we have?
As we look at the Salix proposal, there is an expectation that as you go into FEED and before a final investment decision comes to the board, that there will be the ability to push downward pressure on capital expenses. And that's because if you look at the 105% of the benchmark versus 48% of the benchmark, there's a belief that the level of engineering versus the in-house knowledge we have and knowing what an addition to the plant will take as opposed to a greenfield plant, we'll be able to work toward a lower capital expense. The ability to combine operations of the two plants in terms of how are we locating the term sheet and looking at a single operator for both the Titan facility and the new addition offers opportunities to lower operating expenses, which goes right to your annual operating expense. And so we believe that $15 target is within range. If it goes the other way during the FEED, you might not get a recommendation for a financial investment decision in a project that comes in 30% over 1574 if it goes the other way. Is what I would tell you is that the level of engineering we're at, we're comfortable.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Further questions? Jerry.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd like to kind of walk down through this and ask questions, some that I don't understand, others that I'd like to make a part of the record.
All right. This is a pretty important issue happening here.
So if you could, I'm going to march down through this. And just quick questions.
Okay.
I'm on first page.
Okay.
The cover letter.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. So just, we don't have to have a book, just a paragraph or a few sentences would be fine. So let's start on page 3 of the introductory memo. At this time, we now know that the 7 people that were on the committee that started this 6 months ago, have not been public. Are we able now to tell the public who those people were?
Not yet. Not until the notice of intent is issued, and that will happen once the board makes a recommendation.
So that'll happen sometime after March 31st?
I assume, yes.
Okay. Page 4 of that introductory memo. Directions. When it says that Salix was more acceptable to utilities, just in general, what does that acceptable mean?
Parallel discussions went with both Spectrum and Salix on term sheets that would form the ultimate formation of the contract. And Nick led the discussions with Salix, Mark led the discussions with Spectrum, and then Dan and Steve from the utilities provided the "we're the ones that have to sign at the end of the day" sort of approach. And the willingness to try and change the project to match what the utilities wanted and the structure of payments was more attractive in the term sheet with Salix than it was with Spectrum. And there was more certainty on this is the return I want and how I want it shaped and this is what I want it with Spectrum. And because of Spectrum's background, a more defined, this is the way I plan to do it. Do you want it this way?
So it's safe to say that the utilities are those two drove that sentence there.
Yes.
Okay. I'm still on that same page. Is there a place that shows, Bob, the lower capital cost allowing greater monies to be used somewhere else, i.e. distribution? Is there a table somewhere? I mean, we can do the math in here, I know. If somebody asked me, I can say, well, yes, because that freed up X amount for something else that will drive the rate.
I would expect if, because this is not a certainty, if or when we bring a Salix recommendation, you're going to see side-by-side comparisons of here are publicly available things that help choose, and it would be sources and uses, how it would roll into pricing in high and low demand scenarios, and the kinds of things that both the public body and the community would want to know in order to know why one was chosen over the other.
So on that page, I would ask that whomever wrote this, I think the sentence that starts GVEA, it isn't quite correct, and I would just offer that it should read GVEA unwillingness to evaluate participation. They wouldn't go to the point where they would even sit down to decide whether they could participate. Then they decided not to. So I'm just going to offer that up just because I think that's much more correct. How do you handle, or are we to that point yet? How do you handle low demand? If nobody shows up a year from now to put yes in their house, how does this thing contemplate spending our money or somebody's money to get us over that hump?
That portion actually still is under negotiation.
Okay.
The approach that we've looked at, because I don't want to get into pros and cons and bargaining, but if demand is insufficient, looking at ways to either reduce payments or to replace the equity that's in the plan. Ways to reduce those annual operating expenses are the main ones, and the expectation you should have at the board when we bring your recommendation is to say if oil prices continue to be low and demand doesn't reach even the levels that we'd already reduced it to, what happens? We need to be able to answer that, and we're negotiating that with Salix because it's a challenge to the project. Not in high probability, but a high enough probability that we need contingency for if that happens.
So that's an issue that will be taken care of in March?
Yes.
Greg has a follow-up, I think, to your question.
In that same area of low demand. So low demand's got three legs to the stool. It's got low oil pricing, low degree heating days, and conversion.
Yes.
So is conversion addressed elsewhere?
Conversion is not as part of this. Gene can speak to.
I would like to. I continue to remain concerned both with the financial incentive side of conversion and the health aspect necessity of regulatory action on conversion. So we can wait till you're done and come back to it.
Okay.
Gary?
Okay, on page 5, the top of the page, I just thought it striking, and we should note the ownership at the end of 30 years. That seems to be pretty straightforward to me.
And that's still a discussion in the term sheet discussion.
All right, thank you. Would you, on page 6, this part right here, would you just give a minute? Page 6, the table of what happened at the evaluation committee. Bob, I'd just like for you to talk for a moment about what happened between 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock. And I think it's important to have on the record how the committee looked at this, and I'm going to let you answer, but what was that interaction between those seven people when you had the discussion and decisions?
What we did was, first we went through every document. We spent all the time, and then we, you know, took a deep breath and went to lunch. And, you know, finished our lunch, and we came back, and then it was every person around the table saying, this is what I think. If I'm the picker, this is what I would do, and here's why. And we went around that one time, and then we went around the second time, and we went around the third time, so that everybody, even if they were saying the same thing, had an opportunity to say it more than once or twice and give people with financial backgrounds the ability to understand the people with technical backgrounds' concerns, the people with the technical backgrounds to understand the low demand scenario, so that we're sure we all had agreement on what was important, and that everybody had a chance to air their biggest concerns and all the other concerns. The report you have before you is a summary of that, the results of that, and after that was drafted, that was sent to all seven members of the committee and asked, does this materially match both your understanding of belief of what happened and what the results were? And that's why it took, you know, 3.5 weeks to get this drafted. It only took 2 days to get it drafted, but it took to make sure that everybody had bought off on the contents and competence, because this really came out of Tom's office. But he went individually to each, not have some group reply all edit stuff to reach that. But that last 2 hours was, you know, I think the spectrum is really strong here, I'm worried about this here, and not, you know, the items that you see in the sheet are the ones that there was general agreement on, not the entire list of what every individual thought.
Well, and thank you for that, because this 2.5 hours is really a nut of this whole, what happened there was really a nut of this whole project. And I think it's important that folks understand, and I think once they know who the seven people were on the committee, then it'll be even
I did a lot of the facilitation, and really in the first 2.5 hours I allowed more bird walking than normally you would as you're looking at a document. As people started talking about things that were important on a document, sometimes that got into the discussions that came up later in the day, and so it wasn't just like a federal training where we went through each document the first 2.5 or 3 hours as well. There was give and take on that, and you know, if it went too long, I'd say time out. We'll deal with that at the end of the day. But there was a full day of that. It wasn't just the afternoon.
Okay, thank you for that. So we go to pick one.
Bob, I'm not familiar with the bird watching.
You know, <No. laughs>
kind of delighting the board here and what that really is.
Well, I could point it out on occasion.
So could we go to page 9? And down under gas treatment, and talks about LNG liquefaction, and it talks about this proposal will contemplate that we put 5 million gallon storage in Fairbanks. Is that the 5 million that FNG had, and it was a $30 or $40 million project? Is
yes,
it the
sir.
Same thing? And how many days storage does that give us?
Yeah.
It depends on the timing and the demand and what year we're in.
Okay.
But it will give us, as a minimum, even in some of these, in the latest curves, probably about 10 days.
Ten days.
Yeah, for not including GBA's if GBA was to come online, that's a winter customer. But
so if it's 40 below and the road gets cut off, we have 10 days?
At minimum, that is probably more than that.
Thank you. Salix has said that they'll, Page 10 under detailed project costs, Salix is going to offer up $500,000 for shared costs. Is there a ceiling on our side of that?
This is structured, it would be half of that, so $250,000, and that would be if indeed we come to agreement and you see a early works shared cost agreement in March, that's their approach is. The expectation is $250,000 for Salix, $250,000 for
Avis. So that sentence says Salix proposes, under detailed project costs, line number 4, Salix proposes to contribute up to $500,000 of these costs.
The way that's written doesn't reflect what they proposed. It's $500,000 on a shared, so they would spend $500,000 and send invoices for half of that.
Maybe that sentence needs to be.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for that. A couple years ago, I was introduced to the acronym of an EPC. Will you remind me what an EPC is?
Engineer.
On page 11, top of the page, second paragraph.
Engineer, procure, construct. Essentially, that's a turnkey guaranteed price for a plant. You need a contractor that does that, and you pay a premium for that guarantee.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a margin on the engineering, there's another margin on the procurement, and there's a big margin on construction. All adds up to a number.
Okay. And then further on in here, there's an EPC-M. We'll come to it. We don't have to look for it. We'll come to it. I got a part.
Kirk's going to have to help me with that one.
I got a part here. Oh, 8 months.
Just on page 12,
second paragraph.
So that construction manager at risk approach, where the management is in there too. Page 12, second paragraph.
I believe and manage.
Yeah.
So say again, EPC is, M is?
Manage the construction.
And manage it. All right, thank you. Bob, on page 11, under commercial terms, second paragraph, we speak to the $28 million in aid assessment, and we are going to charge 1% on that. Who decided that should be 1%? Should it be less or more?
We provided that to the vendors to have a constant playing field for use of the SETS money so that we could give them an expectation range that matched the finance into the utilities and the finance and that had been looked at on the North Slope plant. That could change to longer and no interest or shorter and more as you finish your engineering and say, well, what's it going to take to meet the $15 price?
Okay, so that number isn't fixed. That's a plug number to use in the evaluation.
Well, it's close enough to the other financing that happened that it's likely it's going to be necessary to make the project pencil, but it's not. That's not certainly not driven by the vendor. That's within the discretion of this board.
So we just may talk about that in the future about changing that number. Let's see. On page 12, paragraph detail on ability, and you just touched on this a minute ago, I think Fred asked. What at 1574, what is that equivalent? If you take 1574, what is that equivalent to oil? Just so we have a hard number.
$2.10.
Say again? $2.10. Okay. That's just information.
consistent and for range of expectations as we work with Salix on both the term sheets and financing. Our effort is to push that $3.24 down in the $2 range and believe that that's possible. You asked your question earlier, where on 15, if you can get 75 cents to dollar off that $2.24, that gets you in the $15 range.
So that's excuse me,
what is the current price of oil, you know, or if these are delivered home heating fuel?
Dan, like
about $2.
Okay. Right.
I got a load the other day, $1.83.
Plus. Your loads are always lower than everybody else's, and we have to talk about why someday.
So the $3.24, that may come down then, Bob.
That could come down.
Oh, okay. On that same line, that same paragraph, line number 3, it says the delivered price of gas. Would you help to clarify their delivered price at the meter?
That would be at the meter.
Yeah, so if we could write that in there, then there's some confusion about where that happens to be.
We can make that clear in our stuff. This is the third-party report from but yes.
Okay, we could clear that. To the timeline, please, Bob.
Yes,
sir. So if under March 31st, he were to proceed to FID. What is FID?
It's a final investment decision. I'm sorry.
All right, thank you. And let's see. Can we at this table list the big items that are left to negotiate, or do we have to do that in executive
session? I'd really rather do that in executive session.
What is your status? Oh, no. Well, yeah, these things go together. What is your status in regard to this project and your promises made to the chairman under duress?
He's not wearing a Hawaiian shirt yet.
Yeah, I'm not. Yes, I didn't come wearing the Hawaii shirt. My participation is always dependent on, you know, the director and now Gene as well. Until the board acts to pick a project or turn one down, I feel like, you know, you put enough into having me know all this stuff to have me disappear before you make a decision, I think would be not responsible on my part.
Yeah, certainly I appreciate that, and I hope the board and the people at Fairbanks appreciate that. Will you have time before you leave to maybe pencil out a 4,000-gallon pup trailer?
I did. It's about 25 cents is the savings, additional savings for a pup. So I could send you that. When I was doing the transportation.
He was really excited on that.
Yeah, because I forgot to mention it. When I did the spreadsheet on the transportation costs, I did an additional one that if they had a pup and if it cost about X, what would the additional savings be? And I can send it to you.
Is it correct? Mr. Chair, thank you for your board. Thanks for the indulgence to get through some of those. And Bob, we'll see you again, but thank you for your service. You spent a lot of time on this. And we appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Gary. Fred, did you have anything follow-up that you wanted to...
I did not, Mr. Chairman. Other than the conversion question.
Yeah, I want to express my appreciation towards your team, John, for a tremendous amount of work, thousands of hours. Appreciated also the analytical information we got a day or two before this board meeting, so I can go through that. I want to kind of come back to the informal discussion. And wondering if there's opportunities to share with the board some of the intangible economic development that could possibly occur in the future from the recommendation you're giving the board. So that's in the form of a question. Is there other opportunities out there for economic development based on your recommendation?
Well, I think the consideration of that is, the board's decision on which option is chosen, and if there is a final investment decision for the string of activities. I don't think it was necessarily obvious to everyone how natural gas actually gets to Fairbanks currently, but with development off of Cook Inlet, if the board did make the decision to move forward with the sale option, then it would be some additional development in Cook Inlet, some additional development in Matsuburo with construction activity taking place for facilities there, as well as the additional activities in Fairbanks for construction insulation, and you'll also have additional activities that are benefited because of cost savings.
I'd probably give two more. One, the rail, potential rail is a big one for another state-owned asset. And outside of MATSU, the other one is, and I think board members have heard it from the people who run the Bentley Trust in the area where all the box stores are in Fairbanks, is that firm supply with gas has been an impediment to other stores coming in because they're used to a certain structure, they're used to a build model, and it's all gas-based. And there are two or three box stores that you could see in the Fairbanks area as a result of the availability of a firm supply of gas.
Yeah. Do you think there's additional markets that could be developed from the Cook Inlet recommendation?
Well, I defer a little bit to Dan, but I know that there are currently takers of LNG shipments in Talkeetna for lodge purposes. So, depending on we anticipate some continuing activity in tourism and growth in tourism, but other types of facilities that maybe investment in that type of infrastructure could also be recipients of LNG truck shipments. So that's the one that comes to mind.
Mr. Chairman, just on that front, the power generator in Tok has continued to monitor this. AP&T, that's the power generator there. They expressed interest even when the suggested supply was off of the North Slope. You would expect that would be the delivered cost to the community of Fairbanks plus additional transportation. If, in fact, we move forward with the supply out of Cook Inlet, it could potentially be delivered to them at the Fairbanks price minus, because the transportation leg is a little bit shorter. So there are those people out there on the road system that have been monitoring the project. Once we have a tighter suggestion on what the delivery price is in Fairbanks, then they will be able to figure out whether they can make it work economically for their communities on the road system. In addition, there would be production of LNG at Tidewater. There are those entities that have approached AEA in the past for some just basic back-of-the-envelope type of evaluation of what the economics might be to deliver LNG to a hub community somewhere on the water that could put it to use and then potentially serve communities around a hub. Again, that potential is heightened because the production is in fact on Tidewater or close to Tidewater.
Can we weigh in once more? That's on the horizon.
Okay.
Remember, we shrunk from a 9 to a 6 to a 3B plant. And so while all those things are possible, the ability to meet those needs has shrunk along with the size of the plant.
Thank you.
Further questions?
I have a couple of questions.
Elaine?
Could you refresh my memory on the price of oil? What would the price of oil have to be to make the LNG desirable for people to do the conversions?
Mark, you probably did most of the work on the analysis of the price of a barrel of oil versus a gallon of fuel oil. We're probably in the $45 to $55 range
per barrel.
Per barrel of oil got us back into the $2.75 per gallon range. If you just take a rough correlation, and so $30 oil, we're down in the $14.50 equivalent, and we're about equal.
I would add there are other reasons why people would choose to convert to natural gas
other than just the pure delta, there's the air quality. There's also, you know, a lot of people will be facing the decision to put in new boilers anyways, because their old boilers are need to be replaced. They might not look at today's delta between oil and gas. They might look at the long-term, you know, 15-year, 20-year life of the boiler and make a decision based on that. So it's not just purely that delta doing the math to calculate it. We expect some conversions to be driven by the factors.
Dan, you're still getting calls for conversions today, right?
We still do get some. There's, as I said, other drivers and purely price, although, you know, shrink the number of people interested in that. But commercial customers in particular are concerned with very fuel tanks, and that it begins to be more and more of an environmental risk associated with those in the property. So we do have commercial customers that just want those tanks removed to eliminate that environmental risk. Particularly, they're looking to sell a property and things like that. They'd like to have the gas. When you have the gas, you pay for it after you use it. You don't have an investment in inventory in the ground. You know, people have 1,000-gallon plus size fuel oil tanks, and you know, when fuel oil prices are higher, that's a significant dollar amount that you have sitting there invested in the ground that you're just waiting to use. So there's things like that, and then the points of use available for natural gas versus oil. You've got your fireplaces, you've got your range top, you've got your dryers, things like that that'll drive decisions as well.
And the other question I had was, with a normal winter, where you have the cold temperatures, higher demand, will we be able to supply the higher demand?
Yes, we will not take on customers, firm customers, that you can't meet the demand. And so what you'll see is, with the 3B plant, you'll have 4.2 billion cubic feet a year of capacity on the heating degree day curve. And you wouldn't sign up any more customers than you could meet firm demand year-round on the coldest day. What you need to do, though, is you wouldn't see a six-year build-out program until you had more capacity. That the build-out of the pipe that's in the ground will pretty much use up the capacity in the plant that we're putting together.
Mr. Chairman, in addition, I think the estimation of what quantity that you need to meet the yearly demand is not just based on, you know, this year's. This year may be an aberration as far as the degree days. And so you look back at actual history, and you take into consideration a number of years of degree day history to establish what it is, the quantity that you need.
Hey, further questions? Thank you for the update.
And next up is item G, executive session. I'll entertain a motion to go to executive session.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. I move that the board enter an executive session to discuss confidential and financial information related to the Interior Energy Project, Brooks Range Petroleum, Mustang Operations Center, and the Skagway Ore Terminal, and to discuss confidential deliberative process matters regarding potential legislation and financial plans.
Second.
Any objections? All right. Along with
you. Get back on the record.
Thank you. All right. We are back out of executive session, and I will advise the board has not taken any formal action on matters discussed while in executive session. So that finishes new business. We have item number 8, director's comments. John?
Thank you, Chair. Mm-hmm. The administration made the statement in January that we cannot continue with business as usual. Increasingly, we will have to do less with less. I appreciate their comments in light of the state's circumstances and the state's need to adjust the type and level of services provided to citizens. That said, the call on ADA is to do more with our tools and to be creative in their application to support development in the state, and I appreciate the support of our board and our staff as we work through these difficult times. Loan dashboard and reports, development project matrices, and project fact sheets are available for your review in your packets. Also, the Cal investment report is available for review in my office. And we've also included a continuing education calendar, but we continue to be sensitive to travel and hire restrictions. And the next ADA board meeting is scheduled for Thursday, March 31st, 2016 at Ada's office.
Thank you, John. Item 9 is board comments. Any board comments? Dan?
Yeah, I wanted to thank the whole organization for their patience as I'm rapidly still trying to come up to speed on a real sharp learning curve. Also wanted to thank staff. A couple of weeks ago, I had a quick run through of the building, so I now much more understand the deficiencies in the structure. And then lastly, as the chairman knows, working towards a possible board meeting in Wasilla, maybe city council chambers, and the day before a field trip to look at assets and other potential economic development.
Great. Dan, we appreciate your taking the bull by the horns here on that possibility and setting stuff up to get the folks in the valley. We all know that's the growing price in Alaska. And Dan gave me a tour about a month ago. It's impressive. I go out there all the time, but where you showed me where developments have been going was surprising. So I think the board will be pleasantly surprised what the valley has done and how far they've come in the last 10 years. Any other comments? Hearing none with that, I will take a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
So moved.
Thank you. And thank you, board.